Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
And welcome to Today's Issues. That guy gets it wrong almost every time. This is Ed Vitagliano sitting in for the boss, Tim Wildman, who'll be back in the captain's chair tomorrow, Lord willing, and if the creek don't rise. I'm joined in studio by Walker Wildman. Walker, good morning.
Good morning.
And we do want to let our listeners know that we will be posting stories, right?
That's right. We will be posting stories on Facebook, and we'll also be live streaming there so you can watch the show. And you can comment on the show also, share your thoughts on the news stories of the day.
And tomorrow we got something special coming up in the final 25-minute segment of the show. Why don't you let our listeners know?
Tomorrow we're going to try something new. I think this was either your idea, Ed, or Dad's.
Wasn't mine.
Wasn't yours. It was Dad's idea then, Tim's. And so we're going to take questions from 11 to 11:30. We're going to take questions on Facebook. So if you'll just comment under the show live feed with your question, we'll handpick some of those questions, whatever you want to ask for the most part, and we'll answer them on the show. So that'll kind of give some interaction with our listeners.
And that's, we encourage people to follow us on Facebook, the Today's Issues Facebook page. Some people watch our live stream on Facebook. Now, this could get embarrassing if nobody asks any questions.
It could. It's kind of risky. But we're willing to take the risk.
We are willing to take the chance. So anyway, that'll be tomorrow during the final segment of Today's Issues from 11:05 to 11:30. We will take your questions and try to answer as many as possible when you post those questions on Facebook. We want to encourage our Facebook viewers and those who follow the show on Facebook. You are not forgotten, and so we will give you that opportunity. We'll try it, and we'll go from there as to how often we will do that. All right, also in studio is Fred Jackson. Fred, good morning.
Good morning. Once again, not a quiet news day.
Not a quiet news day, and for New York City, and for at least some folks there, it's not a good morning either. I'm sure most of our listeners know what happened, but for some people, they might not, and are, for others, they're trying to catch up on the news of what happened yesterday.
Yeah, sitting in my office, not surprising, I guess, we monitor Fox News, Fox Television News. And sitting in my office yesterday around 2 o'clock our time, Fox News coming on that there had been an incident. Some bikers, pedestrians that were hit. And you see these kinds of things, and initially, there was an accident of some type. And the fact that it occurred in New York, it gets that kind of attention. But within a half hour or so, the truth of what had happened in New York certainly came out. When you start to see the reporting of multiple fatalities from this incident, and then you start to get the eyewitness accounts, Fox, like other news agencies, started to send reporters out, so we had live hits coming from this. In case you have been away from the media over the last 24 hours, what we're talking about is yesterday about 3 o'clock New York time, just as schools were getting out, some people were getting off work. There is a bicycle pathway over on, this is in Lower Manhattan, over on the Hudson River side of things. According to the locals, it's very, very popular. People walk along there. People bicycle along there. Around 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon, a truck driven by now the person who is going to be charged with all of this drove onto that bike pathway area. Now, when you say path, sometimes you think it's a couple of feet wide. No, this is about a lane wide. It's about 10, 12 feet wide. Drove his truck on there and began mowing people down for about a 14-block area. So immediately when those details come out, you start thinking, okay, this is starting to sound like a terrorist act because of what we have seen in England, what we have seen in France in over the last couple of years. And certainly as the afternoon went on, videos started to come out of a guy who was driving this truck. It was a truck that was rented from Home Depot, and a video came out of this guy getting out of this truck after he had mowed these people down, brandishing what looked like two weapons in the video. And this is where the day and age of you can take videos with your cell phones come in very handy.
Yes.
So we see this guy running through the crowd. What we don't see is very quickly there are officers that are in the area, police officers, and one officer shoots at this guy and brings him down, does not kill him. What we then begin to find out is more about this driver of this rental truck. His name is Sefulo Saipov. I may not be pronouncing that right. And as the story unfolds, we find out about this guy. He was let into the United States. He's from Uzbekistan originally. He came in under what's called a diversity visa program. That is a program that was set up by people like Senator Chuck Schumer when he was in the House, Senator Chuck Schumer from New York. It was an effort, they said, the designers of this visa program, to bring about more diversity in the American population. And what they did was target countries that they felt were underrepresented in this country. So at some point, I guess around 2010, they felt that the country of Uzbekistan needed more representation in this country. So they allow this guy to come in. He comes in, he lives in the Tampa area for a couple of years, and more recently apparently moved to the New Jersey area and was working most recently. He's driven truck for a living, and he also was an Uber driver in the last 6 months. And he is the guy now, you know, technically, legally, he is being called the suspect, but he's the guy who did it. We know from the video, he's the guy who did it. He's the guy who was driving the truck. And so apparently in his hospital bed last night, because he is going to recover, he was gleeful about what he did, mowing these people down. What do we know a little bit more about him as of this morning? Apparently, according to one report, he has been on at least some police officers' radar. What we do know about him, he's married, a couple of kids. They lived in an apartment near a mosque in New Jersey. This mosque has been under police surveillance since 2005 because it is in the same area where the 9/11 terrorists who took down the Twin Towers, where they used to meet to plan, apparently. So all of this has been known about by authorities for some time. Some of the people who knew him in Florida said he's a really nice guy. One of his friends, who said, "I didn't know about the bad side of this guy," said he loved America. But what we do know now, through more interviews that have been done over the last 24 hours, is that, for instance, the grocery store where he used to go to there in New Jersey, he used to berate the cashiers, calling them stupid and ignorant, and demanding that prices be lowered on the products that he was buying. The New York mayor or New York governor saying this morning that he was radicalized in this country. Now, what's the point of that? Probably trying to defend this diversity visa program. We do know, along with brandishing these guns, he started screaming when he got out of his truck yesterday, "Allah Akbar," which again points to this was terrorist related. Was he in contact with ISIS? That is not clear yet. One other detail that has come out this morning is that apparently on an ISIS website, authorities were able to see a picture of this area where the attack occurred yesterday. They picked up on that a month ago. So does that mean this guy was in contact with ISIS before he carried out this deed? I don't know, but it's an interesting fact in all of this. Early this morning, President Trump was tweeting out, "We got to get rid of this diversity visa program, make our immigration more on merit." And various people coming out this morning are certainly talking that way. One of the people who was interviewed on Fox News this morning, Fox analyst Jason Chaffetz, who is former congressman from Utah. He was asked about this visa program, this diversity visa program, and this is what he had to say.
Over the years that I was in Congress, there were a number of people who wanted to get rid of the diversity visa program. But what is the most ridiculous way to pick the next United States citizen? Not on merit, not on family, just literally a lottery. You had one country, I think it was Bangladesh, they took literally everybody on their phone book and put them in for the lottery. And you literally, I mean, coming to the United States is a privilege. And I see a mugshot. Now, if you're coming here to this country and you've got an arrest record, you should get in. And if you're here and you get arrested, and you've then kick them out of the country. It's a privilege to be here. Well, we don't need people like that here. And you should get rid of the family. This guy who committed this crime, assuming that he did commit this crime, his entire family should be deported. It's that we're so nice and so politically correct.
Because
with
this program,
here.
You can automatically bring everybody
you get
in your
to bring
family.
In your immediate
Chain
family.
Migration.
That's right.
Wow.
Well, I think former Congressman Jason Chavez saying what a lot of people are thinking this morning. This diversity lottery, diversity visa lottery, where you get your green ticket based on the country in which you live, because your country is benefited by this particular lottery at this time. And basically, your name is picked out, and you're allowed to come in. I was talking to you guys this morning in our story meeting. It sounds to me like I underwent more scrutiny in my petition for a green card 20 years ago.
Are you from Canada?
From Canada. I underwent more scrutiny than this guy did. I had to prove, I had, you know, many, 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 many forms had to be filled out. In fact, at one point they sent me back the forms because I had not put in what high school I graduated from.
Right.
So they weren't going to let me in the country unless they knew what high school I graduated from. All right, they were that particular about it with my application. Further, I had to prove that I would never be a burden on the state financially. I have to have a job, obviously, and I had to have a sworn affidavit from my father-in-law, who lived here in the United States, that if ever I became unemployed, that he would take care of me, that right. I would not be a burden to the state. So all of this took months to happen. So it sounds like if Canada had been on the diversity visa radar and we, you know, the United States decided they needed more Canadians, I wouldn't have had to gone through all of that. So that is being talked about this morning. The other thing being talked about right now is the question of whether, and Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, Republican Senator of South Carolina, was interviewed on Fox this morning. This is Cut 2, Brent.
The law allows to hold someone like this as an enemy combatant. If somebody's associated with radical Islamic terrorism, they can be held under the law of war as an enemy combatant, interrogated consistent with the Geneva Convention without being read their Miranda rights. The goal of the law of war is to win the war. Criminal law is about disposing of a crime. I'm more worried about intelligence gathering now than I am prosecuting him. So he should never hear you have the right to remain silent. He should be turned over to our military, to our intelligence officials, and be interrogated consistent with the law of war as an enemy combatant to gather intelligence. To those who say the best way to gather intelligence is to give a terrorist a lawyer and read them their Miranda rights, you're crazy. I talked to Jeff, why isn't the guy in Libya going to Gitmo? He's one of the masterminds of the attack on our consulate in Benghazi. If taking up arms against the United States, ransacking a consulate and killing our ambassador and three other Americans doesn't qualify you as an enemy combatant, there's something wrong with the law. So I beg the Trump administration to reject the Obama policy of turning the war into a crime and treat this like a war, consistent with the law of war.
All right. What Senator Graham was referring to there at the last, he said he talked to Jeff. He's referring to the Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
Right.
Earlier in this week, you may remember that our forces captured one of the key leaders in the attack in Benghazi and brought him back to the United States. So it's not clear whether he's been brought to a federal court yet. What Senator Graham was saying about this particular incident and this man who is now in police custody.
You're talking about Saipov.
Saipov, involved with yesterday's terrorist attack. Senator Graham was saying, I hope he has not been read his Miranda rights. Because once that happens, this case goes into a federal court before a federal judge.
Right.
What Graham is saying is that he hopes Jeff Sessions will take this guy and put him in Gitmo. and there, keep them there as long as you want so that you can get information from him. Because the moment you read his Miranda rights, he gets himself an ACLU lawyer who says, keep your mouth shut.
Right.
And not be questioned about this at all. And what Graham is saying, attack like occurred in New York yesterday, is an act of war against this country, and he ought to be treated like an enemy combatant.
Well, and I saw a video of a lot of New York officials. This was 2 hours after the attack. So they didn't have a lot of information yet, but they were sharing what they had. You know, chief of police, you know, there's a bunch of them who were discussing this. And, you know, one of the things that they said that I noticed was, well, the investigation's ongoing. And this is to Senator Lindsey Graham's point. There are a lot of things we don't know. But some of the things we do know now is that Saipov was glad he did what he did. So if you think you're going to read him his Miranda rights and then try to, you know, once you know, we've all seen the shows, you know, Blue Bloods or, you know, Law and Order or whatever, you try to make a deal, you know, with a suspect and say, well, hey, listen, we can work this out if you give us some information about maybe ISIS and who you've been working with. And but if this guy's proud of what he did, he doesn't care about a deal. All right. So the only way you're going to get to someone like this is you put him in Gitmo. And we're talking about Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, which is a American naval station, Marines station there. And this is where, since 9/11, we've been putting combatants in the war on terror. Mm-hmm. And what you do is you work on them there to get information. But I'm convinced that if President Obama had been able to do what he wanted to do,
yeah,
and what the left wanted to do, which is to get all these terrorists into the federal court system, mm-hmm, President Obama would have done it. Remember, mm-hmm, they wanted to I think it was a federal maximum security prison in Illinois, maybe.
Yeah, and
they wanted to put them there.
Fellow, right? Democrat Durbin from Illinois said, I don't want him there.
Right.
Right.
My people don't want him there.
Yeah.
And to your point with regards to President Obama, remember what he did. When he didn't get his way, he started making deals with these countries that these guys came from, Yemen, places like
started
that.
Started sending them back.
In the middle of the night, put them on airplanes down there in Cuba and sent them back to these countries. So that was his way of emptying. I will never forget, it was Inauguration Day from Barack Obama. What was the first thing he said? We're going to shut down Gitmo.
Yeah, that, yes, was a campaign promise.
Priority one.
He said it would be the first thing he did.
Yes.
And then he realized he couldn't do that because there was nowhere to put these guys.
Right. Yes.
And that became a political albatross, mm-hmm, for President Obama and the left, because there were many on the left who wanted to do precisely what President Obama wanted to do. But the political cost for doing that would have been exorbitant, and so they backed down.
Well, Dick Durbin knew that.
Yes.
The Democrat, yeah, senator, senior Democrat senator.
These guys could have radicalized other prisoners in the federal system.
Of course.
It's yeah, nuts what they were trying to do.
There's two things that I'm upset about. I mean, this is horrible to have eight Americans or eight people in America die on the streets.
Because they weren't all Americans.
Right, right. No. Some eight innocent lives gone now, and then others injured. That in itself is a tragedy. You don't even have to go any farther to that. But I'm watching this press conference, which is New York City officials kind of updating on the investigation and stuff. And the governor just said the effort to create mayhem and terror failed.
Failed.
And I'm looking at that going, no, I mean, I wish it would have failed, but it didn't. He succeeded. The Islamic, and it's not just terror, there's many, terror is very generic. The guy in Las Vegas committed a terrorist act. We don't know really what kind of terrorist act or what his motives were, but when you kill 58 people, that's a terror attack, no matter what your reasoning is. So this is not just a terror attack, this guy is an Islamic terrorist. And so, but nobody's saying that. Even President Trump is not saying Islamic terrorist anymore. Mm. And so it's important to mention that this is Islamic terror. This is, if you had Christians slaughtering innocent people, they would say it's Christian terror. Mm-hmm. It's Christians committing this. This is Islamic terror. And the effort to create mayhem and terror did not fail. He succeeded, unfortunately. But this is what they do. The officials try to calm everybody down, which that is their job, is to calm the public down. But I think they're trying to calm us down so we don't want to do anything about it. So we don't want to stop people from terror-prone countries from coming into America. Mm-hmm. So I just think they're way too quick to calm everybody down when there's innocent blood in the streets.
And
I think we should be
upset.
And
how does Governor Cuomo know that he didn't succeed in generating fear? If I live in New York City this morning, I'm just been reminded again by this incident. I could leave my house this morning, and I could be the next victim of a terrorist attack.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, and here's the problem. I think what Governor Cuomo is saying, and some of these New York officials have said, well, you know, citizens of New York City are resilient. And I guess what they mean is, well, they're going about their business, they're going to work, they're mm-hmm. doing, you know, they had the holiday, you know, the Halloween parade, you know, like as scheduled last night, or, you know, maybe late afternoon last night. But resiliency and going about your life after an attack like that is different than terror.
Right.
These people may still be afraid.
Yes.
And to your point, Walker, this is bound to have been successful on some level. And listen, we don't know right now what this man's connection, Saipov, however you pronounce his name. I've heard it pronounced a couple different ways. But we don't know exactly what his ties were to ISIS, but we do know from what ISIS has said publicly from its media branch, if you can believe that, it has laid out this very scenario. This is what you do. Mm-hmm. You rent the truck, you find the spot, and you leave a note tying your deed to ISIS.
Which he did.
Yeah.
Left it on the seat of the truck that he rented.
Right. ISIS will live forever or something to that effect. So we do know at least that he's following the ISIS playbook, whether or not he got direct orders. And ISIS had called for attacks on Halloween.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, to me, it's if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck and looks like a duck, it's a duck.
Yeah. And another thing is if, let's just say for hypothetically, to clarify this, If the U.S. for some reason says, or our government says, you know, here's who we're at war against, and here's how to carry out the attacks, and then folks carry out those attacks no matter what country they're in, then that they're acting on behalf of whatever government ordered the attacks. In this case, it's the caliphate, Islamic State. They're ordering these attacks, and folks like this are carrying out the attacks. They're following the instructions, and they're leaving evidence and stuff. So, like Lindsey Graham said, this is an act of war. Mm-hmm. Just because he didn't, you know, send emails to terrorists in the Middle East and plan it out with others doesn't make it any more important. I mean, that really is irrelevant. Either way, he killed 8 people, injured 11, mm-hmm. and he did it on behalf of jihad. So, I don't really know why it matters whether he orchestrates with people.
And what Senator Graham was saying, I mean, I absolutely agree with him, is this is what, you know, they call this asymmetrical warfare. So symmetrical warfare is when you get two sides on a battlefield, everyone's got tanks, everyone's got, you know, helicopters and weapons and those kind of things. Asymmetrical warfare is this. Hmm. It is attacks done on civilian targets, so on and so forth. So I absolutely agree with Senator Graham. This should be treated as an act of war. It's asymmetrical. It's not on a battlefield. But these individuals who commit these kinds of acts should be sent to Guantanamo Bay. And they should not be allowed in the federal court system, because if they get convicted, they're only going to continue to radicalize people here in this country. It's amazing the kind of blindness that we seem to be suffering when it comes to trying to win an actual war, which is a war on terror. All right. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman. I'm joined in studio by Walker Wildman and Fred Jackson. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we will continue with the news of the day. On today's issues, you're listening to American Family Radio.
On the next Today's Issues, our guest will be Dr. Alex McFarland of Exploring the Word.
Christianity is not a pain-free life always. Part of this life is death.
We'll also take a close look at news with Fred Jackson. We'll talk Christmas wristbands, and for the first time, we'll have a question and answer session through Facebook Live. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope?
I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
Ever felt like all your efforts, time, investment, and hard work are bringing little or no return?
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
Well, I certainly have. Jesus once asked his followers to feed 5,000 people, and they replied, "How do you want us to do this?" So Jesus took 5 loaves and 2 little fish from a boy in the crowd and fed everybody there with 12 baskets full of leftovers. His followers had worked hard to accomplish an impossible task, but Jesus brought the leverage factor into that meal. He made the resources go far beyond what his followers could have ever dreamed. Seeing the Lord leverage my life is a real source of hope.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at gethoperadio.com. That's gethoperadio.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
From director Kevin Sorbo and executive producer Sean Hannity comes Let There Be Light. Saul Harkins is a man who has turned away from God, but a near-fatal car crash gives him one last chance to renew his life, his family, and his faith. Let There Be Light, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. Now playing. More information is available at lettherebelightmovie.com.
I don't know about you, but I've grown tired of the platitudes, the hollow statements of defiance. Our spirit will not be broken. The terrorists will not win. Well, the fact of the matter is, the terrorists are winning, thanks in large part to politically correct lawmakers and lax immigration policies. The suspect in Tuesday's New York City attack came to our shores, allegedly through a diversity visa program. Our government was willing to sacrifice our safety for the sake of multiculturalism. I shudder to imagine how many other Islamic radicals are lurking in the shadows, waiting to drive a pickup truck into a crowd of innocents, waiting to shout Allah Akbar as they wage their bloody jihad. How many more people must die in the name of the religion of peace? Americans have a choice. We can either be safe or we can be politically correct. We cannot be both. I'm Todd Starnes.
Brian Fisher here. After yesterday's Muslim attack in New York, it's time for us to wake up and smell the jihad. I'll talk about what we should do if we're serious about this problem, and I'll identify the only 2 questions we need to ask to do extreme vetting. That and more today on Focal Point at 105 Central.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano and Fred Jackson sitting in with Walker Weilman. Walker, we've got something special coming up at 11:05 today as well. What are our listeners looking forward to?
Yes, this year is the 40th anniversary of the American Family Association, which is the parent organization of American Family Radio. And to help celebrate that, we've been airing these In God We Trust specials throughout the year. So we're going to air one today at 11:05 Central. In God We Trust, Hope for America radio special. Dr. Robert Jeffers will be the special guest. The host will be John Rowley. Many of American Family Radio listeners are familiar with John Rowley.
And, boy, we need hope in this day and age. A lot of stuff going on, a lot of heavy things going on. Folks, we know you feel that heaviness and that pressure, and it's important that Christians not despair. Despair is, it's a sin. It's very understandable that we fall into it because of circumstances, but to despair is to give up on God's power and his promises and his love. So anyway, this will be a special. It will give you hope for this country because our focus is and always will be on God Almighty and the Lord Jesus Christ, who reigns at the right hand of God. So anyway, I don't want to get into preaching mode, because that could take us off into the weeds. So although it's never into the weeds to point people back to God's Word. Fred, before we leave this subject of this terrorist attack, and we're just listening to Brian Fisher's tease for his upcoming program Focal Point today. He called it an act of Muslim terror. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this is radical Islam that is generating these kinds of attacks. We do want to make at least some mention of the victims and some of the unique circumstances that they found themselves in.
Yeah, five of the eight who were killed yesterday, not American citizens. They were from Argentina. It's a bunch of guys, and I think Fox had this picture this morning. It's a bunch of guys came up from Argentina just a few days ago as part of a 30-year class reunion. They all graduated 30 years ago from a polytech institute there in Argentina. And to celebrate the 30 years that they've been out, graduated from that polytech institute, they decide to go to New York. So they come up to New York, and one of the guys paid the way for two of the guys who were killed yesterday. They didn't have the finances to fly to New York and stay in hotels, et cetera, et cetera. So he paid their way. So five of the eight yesterday, they were there on that bicycle pedestrian pathway when this Islamic terrorist mowed them down with that truck. So hearts and prayers go out for them. I'm not sure of the identity of the other three yet. And let's remember the other 11 who were injured in this.
And some of them, I don't know the details, but are probably, you know, very critical injuries. This is a moving vehicle, and
mm-hmm. yeah,
and of course, if it hadn't been for these five, I mean, the other stories would have probably been equally mm-hmm. heart-wrenching, you know, because these are innocent people. They haven't done anything to this man, and they're going about their daily lives, and, mm-hmm. and unexpectedly this happens. So we are asking people to pray for those families, and you know, to continue to pray for those who are injured.
One more point: it happened, I think, just before 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon, New York time. There is a school right next to this pathway.
The high school, wasn't it?
Yes, it was just about to let all those kids out.
Oh my goodness!
And a lot of them, some of them were interviewed yesterday because they were eyewitnesses to the carnage that occurred. And some of these kids, they would have been on that walkway on their way home from school when this happened.
And I hadn't thought about that, because this took place about 3:30 Eastern time.
Eastern time.
So I hadn't even thought about that, because I know that the van came to a stop, actually hit a school bus.
Yes.
On the school bus, two adults and two children.
Mm-hmm.
And hadn't thought about the fact of kids being let out. You know how I'm sure it's a big high school. It's in New York.
Yeah.
The place would have been flooded with
streets flooded
kids. Oh my goodness! Well, yeah. that would have been that'd been awful. Well, I want to welcome in studio, no stranger to our listening audience, Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst, general counsel, also host of his own radio program. Tell our listeners about your radio program, and then we want to get any thoughts you have on what happened yesterday in New York.
Yeah, it's my show comes on at 5 p.m. Central, 5 to 6 p.m., well, 5:05 to 6 p.m. Central, Monday through Fridays, here on AFR. It also comes on the Urban Family format, and we tackle the issues of the day from a biblical perspective. And this thing I found rather interesting, and I don't know if you guys have delved into this at all, but it seems like the president has been reluctant to identify this as Islamic terrorism. And it just reminded me of Sebastian Gorka's letter that he wrote after his resignation, that he was concerned that all of the people that were surrounding the president in his inner circle were not those who, as Sebastian Gorka explained it, were advocates of the Trump agenda. And I think that's something that we're going to have to keep our eyes on going forward, because I call them the Ivanka contingent, not limiting it
Ivanka
to Jared. Yeah, not limited to Jared and Ivanka Trump, but what they represent in terms of being, you know, New York Democrats, quite frankly, mm-hmm. And those who would be more open to the globalist, cultural Marxism type politically correct narrative. So that is something that is concerning to me. because one of the things that resonated with the American people was President Trump was plain spoken, was basically saying the things that they felt. You know, here you have a guy in they identified his name. I mean, his name means Sword of Allah, yet he's arrested in being his first name. Literally means Sword of Allah.
Really?
And his middle name means Lover of Allah. And he yells out, "I want my snack bar," but we're going to interview him to try to find out what his motives may be.
Wait a second. I love my snack bar. What?
Yeah, I don't like saying those words. I just
okay. All right. So what he shouted out is the
Islamic
Muslim chant.
Yeah.
You have changed it. I understand that.
Sorry.
I love my snack bar. All right.
Yeah, and it's just
took me by surprise.
Yeah, I know. I'm speaking seriously and somberly, and then I say something like that. Sorry.
That's right.
But it's just concerning to me because my question is, where is candidate Trump on these issues? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the question that I have is whether or not he is being led down this path. And again, the questions I have on other issues that many people consider contentious. Dealing with Charlottesville riots and things of that nature, seeing, you know, good people on both sides, he hadn't moderated his position on those issues. So why then would he apparently moderate his position on this issue? And I know some people say, well, he did tweet something about ISIS, which I think is potentially a dangerous head fake in that ISIS is not the only purveyor of this Islamic caliphate driven totalitarian ideology. They are the most popular at this moment, but they're not the exclusive purveyors of it. And I just don't want the American people thinking that ISIS equals the exclusive threat of Islamic terrorism.
Because if ISIS appears to be being rolled up in Iraq, but this is not like defeating Nazi Germany, where you get a surrender and you get a treaty and blah 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 blah. If ISIS gets rolled up and that particular quote unquote caliphate collapses, somebody else is going to take up the mantle because this is an ideology. It's not a nation. It's not a country. It's not an army that you defeat once and for all and they surrender.
Like whack-a-mole. You know,
right.
They get rolled up, like you said, somebody else would pop up. In my opinion, in order for the American people to develop the internal constitution necessary to vigorously stamp out this enemy, the American people have to be familiarized with the ideology.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any way around it.
Right.
Yeah, President Trump tweeted out yesterday, this was his first reaction, at least on Twitter, to the attack, the terrorist attack. He said, in New York City, looks like another attack by a very sick and deranged person. Here's what I have to say about that. He is sick. He's sick with the Islamic ideology of supremacy and jihad. He wanted to kill people. But he's not deranged. At least I've not seen any reports of him going to a psychiatrist and being diagnosed with a mental illness. Deranged means that you're mentally unstable. And so, but if you say he's very sick and deranged, then we're getting away from what the real problem is, which is his Islamic beliefs. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can't give a pill and make this guy better. This guy's a sick person who wanted to murder people on the name of his religion. And that's it. And if we don't talk about that, then we're not really talking about
poisoned.
The problem.
He's been poisoned. His mind and his heart have been poisoned by an ideology that has led him to hate people who are not Muslim.
Right.
So that's a good point. This man is not deranged, if by deranged you mean mentally unstable and hearing voices and those kind of things.
I'd like to ask Abe a question, a legal question, and we played a clip a few moments ago of Lindsey Graham. He was on Fox and Friends this morning, and it had to deal with Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina was saying, I hope this guy has not been read his Miranda rights yet. And the point that Senator Graham was making is that once you read him his Miranda rights, he lawyers up, he's not going to be shipped to Gitmo. And Lindsey Graham's point is this was an act of war yesterday. And don't read him as Miranda rights. Put him on a plane and send him to Gitmo and keep him there and get information from him. Because once he lawyers up, he doesn't have to talk about how did you come to this conclusion, what contacts have you had, all of those sorts of things. I'd like your impression of the senator's point.
Yeah. I think Senator Graham may be because I think he may be ignoring the fact that the guy is a legal resident. Because this particular terrorist is a legal resident.
Is a legal
is
resident.
Is a legal resident. Is a green card holder of the U.S. So
what does that mean in terms of civil rights?
Exactly. That's where I was getting to. And he is closer towards being able to being protected by the Constitution, having appealed to come here through the U.S. lottery visa program that afforded him the rights to come here. I don't think the law enforcement officers have the luxury to choose not to Mirandize him in this instance. If they want to talk to him, they're gonna. If they want whatever evidence they get to be useful in a court of law in America, they're gonna have to administer the Miranda rights. Now,
all right. So let me ask you. Let me just interrupt real quickly, mm-hmm. and let me just ask you a quick question. This is a little bit tangential. Mm-hmm. So is there, if you come here legally through a visa program, and you come here illegally but are in the United States, do both of those groups have constitutional protections?
Yes and no. And let me tell you why I say that. They don't have the same types of constitutional protections. For example, the deportation process for an illegal alien, you don't get the same Miranda rights, the same features of due process, but there still is a due process process, if you will, to deport an illegal person here. Mm-hmm. Now, if you are a legal resident, the status conferred to you under the Constitution is one that you have come here under the auspices of the legal framework that is the United States of America, and you are offered, I guess it's not like a bargaining, but as a result of appealing to the legal processes, you then get to take cover under the constitutional framework.
That's
of the
interesting
legal
because And then because you have judges wanting to apply the Constitution to folks who haven't even stepped foot in the U.S. through some kind of immigration system, like the judge in Hawaii who's wanting to grant folks who have maybe not even applied for citizenship or a visa to the U.S. or a green card, he's wanting to apply the Constitution to someone who may still be in Turkey at their house.
Mm-hmm. Which is a blatant abuse.
Yeah, I could see how if you've already been accepted into the system and you're pending, your plane flight over here, how you could have some kind of due process.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really way extreme to be applying constitutional protections to someone who's not even stepped foot or been approved to step foot on U.S. soil.
That's right, and it's nuanced. But it's not as if it's like concealed. You know, it's not like hard distinctions to make. Clearly, a legal U.S. resident is light years away from a foreign national who may at some hypothetical point in the future want to come to America, mm-hmm. or even a foreign national who's come to America illegally.
Right.
Those are not the same people, mm-hmm. legally speaking.
Graham, Senator Graham, in his interview this morning, also made mention of this guy who U.S. forces captured. Who was one of the architects of the Benghazi attack.
Mm-hmm.
He was brought to the United States in the last 48 hours. No one is clear yet on where he is.
Mm-hmm.
And Graham mentioned, I sure hope he hasn't been read his Miranda rights. Does he have?
Sure hope he has or has not?
Has not.
And welcome to the mind of the Graham Cracker. He's ridiculously crazy.
You know,
this guy doesn't have, he's not a United States citizen.
Exactly.
So why would he hope that this guy from Libya is read his Miranda rights?
No, I think he was saying he hopes he was not read.
It was not read.
Oh, was mind. Not.
Yes.
I agree with that.
Yes, yeah. Was not read and taken before some federal judge that we don't know about.
He has no Miranda rights.
No.
Yeah, so that's what we're trying to find out. So,
yeah.
So when Senator Lindsey Graham said, what we played the clip about Saipov, Saifulo, I guess, is, I'm not sure how you pronounce the first name, Saipov, that when he says he hopes he has not been read his Miranda rights, you're saying in all probability he would have to be read and have to go into the federal court system.
Yes.
Which goes back even further to what President Trump has been trying to do, and that is keep these kinds of people from becoming legal residents.
Right.
Because then once they get in the federal system, then you've got to treat them the way a U.S. citizen would be treated, all kinds of constitutional protections, and to the point made by Fred, we get nothing from them.
And some people may disagree with what I'm about to say, but some might agree, but we're in an act of war with Islamic Jihad. We see that in New York. They're actually on U.S. soil. This isn't a foreign war. This is a war that's taking place in New York City. As long as we are in war with Islamic Jihad, meaning we have troops overseas fighting Islamic Jihad, then we can keep prisoners of war. And if that means the guy in Libya who attacked our U.S. consulate, send him down to Gitmo, and then just tell ISIS when they want to quit attacking us, we'll let their guys go. But bringing them here and on our tax dollars and putting them through the process, and he's going to sit in the federal penitentiary for 50 years. Who knows?
And gathering loyal disciples yeah. To Islamic Jihad.
Yeah, let's be clear that the liquidating the residents of Gitmo, there is nothing under our laws that require that.
Right.
That's simply, you know, former President Obama wanting to do that, saying that he personally feels it's, you know, inhumane treatment. But there's nothing that requires that to happen. Foreign nationals, non-U.S. citizens, do not get the protections of the United States Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, listen, we're coming towards the end of our second segment here. And you were talking about political correctness. And another story that's related to that idea, although we're going to now step away from what happened in New York City yesterday. Fred, you've got a story and a poll. Kind of got some surprising stuff in it from, I think, the Cato Institute.
Yeah, it's the headline is this. 71% of Americans say political correctness has silenced discussions society needs to have. 58% have political views they're afraid to share. And I think this is a long, long survey. But the thrust of it, Abe, is very interesting. More and more people, particularly conservatives, according to this survey, say they are intimidated by the way things are going. For example, what is being classified as hate speech. Mm. You know, it's like people are afraid to say, and this is one of the issues addressed in here, they're afraid to say they may totally disagree with the KKK and their point of view. But if they say, I believe the First Amendment covers the right of a KKK person to express their views, more and more people are saying of that individual who disagrees with the KKK but says they have a right to express their views, more and more people are saying the fact that you express, you say they have a right to express their views makes you a hater also. And so we're reaching that point where, and you know this, Abe, as a lawyer, hate, or what subjectively is being described as hate, is being transferred into law and quashing the free speech rights of many primarily conservatives today. And I'm thinking about on campus, on our university campuses, and this Cato survey addresses that. In particular, conservatives really feel that their rights are being threatened by political correctness being encoded into the law.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I read that Cato survey, and I talked about it on the radio yesterday. What's interesting is that a majority of Democrats don't feel that they have to self-censor their views on various issues. And you're right, this is part of the reason, and I've long held this belief, I as a prosecutor, I opposed the advent of hate crimes legislation into the legal framework. Because almost every state and the federal government has sufficient laws without creating another category of hate crimes in order to prosecute individuals. That's why that's why crimes have a range of punishment. In the state of Texas, the murder statute, the general murder statute, not capital murder, has a sentencing range anywhere from 5 years in prison to life. Why is that? To take into account the various types of crimes that would occur. And I would argue all the time that when you create these false categories of hate crimes victims, you're saying that one victim is more important than another victim simply because of various life choices they might have made. Mm-hmm. And I said long ago that this is nothing more than a Trojan horse to advance an anti-American, unconstitutional, and I would even say the radical, sexually deviant agenda into the American framework. And so by saying, oh, that's speech, but that's hate speech, the touchstone of First Amendment liberty has been and always will be whether or not we are willing to defend the right of a person we disagree with to make their statements. But what we're saying now is, and it's that really the net result of the intentional application of cultural Marxism, the goal is to stamp out dissent. And we're seeing that happen. And you see where the dissent is being stamped out. People who have conservative views feel intimidated from launching into them. And on my television, on the radio program, I said, if we dig a little deeper, you'll find more specifically what views are being stamped out. Because I would hazard to say that the conservatives wouldn't be afraid to talk about their political leanings concerning tax policy in public.
Right.
But when you get to issues of biblical import, that is where the silence is taking place. And what we see happening is that people who have Christian convictions are absenting themselves from the public discourse.
And well, to your point, 90%, this is the Cato poll, 90% of liberals say it's hateful or offensive to say homosexuality is a sin.
Yeah, 90%. Mm-hmm.
Wow. 90% of liberals say that's hate speech. If you say, I believe the Bible, and the Bible does clearly condemn homosexuality, I believe the Bible says homosexuality is a sin. 90% of liberals say that's hate speech.
Well, and this goes to the point that you made, either you or Fred made, Abe, but Democrats were the one group in this Cato Institute poll who did not feel like they had to self-censor. However, 73% of Republicans said they keep some political beliefs to themselves. Now you say, well, why is that? Well, obviously what they are hearing back in the halls of power, or so I would say, college campuses, the news media, those kind of things, they are hearing that they shouldn't be saying these hateful things. They are self-censoring. But what was most frightening to me in this survey is the beliefs of those on the left. Now, even though 59% of Americans think people should be allowed to express unpopular opinions in public, even those deeply offensive to others, 40% think government should prevent hate speech. Now, that's not a majority, but that's a pretty sizable chunk. Also, 51% of staunch liberals say it is morally acceptable to punch Nazis. I mean, we're talking about physical violence. 51% of Democrats support a law that requires Americans to use transgender people's preferred gender pronouns.
What percentage?
51% of Democrats. Now, people say that's a slim majority. It's a majority of Democrats saying the government should force Americans to use, these bizarre gender pronouns. 58% of Democrats say employers should punish employees for offensive Facebook posts on their own time. I mean, if you're a Republican or you're a conservative or you're even a libertarian or independent, you start to hear this chatter, and that makes clear to me why they feel like they need to keep their political beliefs to themselves. That's frightening, because this stabs at the heart of American freedom.
That's a different country.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's scary. You know, I'm just sitting here thinking, I'm a Christian and I work Facebook. I work at Facebook.
Yeah.
And we know that is Jeff Zuckerberg, is that his name, CEO?
Yeah, that's Facebook, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, Mark Zuckerberg.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Mark, yeah.
So I'm in the lunchroom and I've got my Bible open. And somebody asked me, hey, what you reading there? And, oh yeah, do you believe the Bible condemns homosexuality? Okay, I'm the Christian sitting in the lunchroom on my own time, got my Bible out. I'm a Christian, and I believe what the Bible says. Up that employee goes to Zuckerberg, hey, you got a problem employee.
You think that doesn't happen?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what conservatives are scared of.
Those Christians keep their Bibles at home so that they don't have to answer that question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what I think happens, because that's human nature.
It's a muzzling. I mean, I go to the fire chief in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Kelvin Cochran. Mm-hmm.
There it is.
Yep.
He left his Bible at home, and he was still fired.
Yes, because he had the audacity to publish a book that wasn't even solely about sexuality. All right, folks, listen, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we have a special coming up on in honor of the 40th anniversary of American Family Association, Hope for America with Robert Jeffress and John Riley. And we will see you tomorrow, the rest of us, for today's issue.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.